Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax and I am here with Michael Brazemley. Don't introduce yourself yet because I want to do a little introduction for you. You know, I was first introduced to Michael when we met at a union meeting because our first introduction at all was a phone call where I was told, hey, you should call Michael because that dude's running for president. Maybe Michael called me. I must have said like, hey, we'll give him my contact information or something like that. And dude, that's one of the great things about Michael is he is not shy about calling and talking to strangers and talking to people generally. And that's great because I am shy about that. And so Michael fills that void. So when I first got to know him, it's all right, well, he's the only guy running for president aside from our incumbent who not a fan. And so I guess I'm hitching my wagon to this guy for better or worse, because what choice do I have? But dude, the more I've gotten to know Michael, dude's pretty sharp. And he has some skills that I do not have. And he is very good about calling people. He's very comfortable with having confrontation or having uncomfortable conversations, which I am not. And the dude is also a pretty damn good grievance handler. And he has a great knowledge of the contract and understanding contractual language and how it works. And that's what we're going to talk about today. As you already see from the episode title, we're going to talk about the deems desirable list. So, Michael, just to get us started, what is deems desirable? Or what is it? Because I know you're going to wind up saying it's bullshit, it's not a thing. But what is it from management's perspective? What does management think it is?
Management's idea to make it hard for carriers to call in sick. So because they have to go see a doctor to get a doctor's note whenever they feel like it. So that the carriers have to go get a doctor's note, which will cost the carrier money and time. And so they're trying to make it hard for people to call in sick.
Right. And the language of that is like, it came from some, where did that language come from, deems desirable?
Yeah, so it says when management feels it deemed necessary for the
protection
of the postal service.
Yeah, postal
then they can put them on a restricted sick leave, okay? Because of those words, management has created a program called deemed desirable program and decided using it. But it is exactly basically what the restricted sick leave is. What it deems desirable is. And management will say, this is not restricted sick leave, but actually it is.
Right, because the result is the exact same, that you have to provide documentation. But with restricted sick leave, there's notification requirement that you have to tell somebody, you're on restricted sick leave, it's for this amount of time, this is the reason, or whatever. And management tries to sidestep that with deems desirable. Mm-hmm. All right, so Michael filed a grievance on a carrier. Well, give us the broad strokes of the grievance right up front, like what it was that caused you to file this grievance.
So management obviously put a deemed desirable list on three of my carriers, okay? And the three carriers came up to me and said, hey, they told me that I'm put on deemed desirable. And so I asked them, well, did they give you a notice? Did they give you a written notice? Because they're supposed to give you a written notice in advance of that they're doing this.
Right,
they're
for like, restricted sick leave, right. That's a requirement.
And they're like, no, they didn't get a notice, okay? And then they're finding out that, hey, they go online on Lightblue to put in for sick leave, and it says, hey, you're on a deemed desirable list, so therefore you must bring a doctor's note. Well, that's kind of BS, because you're already sick, and if it's only been only for one day, what would be the point of going to see a doctor for one day?
Right, it's a waste of time and money.
Right, so it becomes a very inconvenient for the carrier. So, and that is the reason why we have to file a grievance on this every time a management does this. Okay. And so I filed many, many deemed desirable grievances, and including some of them where there was monetary compensation for the carrier, especially if they had to use money at the hospital. Okay. Because sometimes when you go there, you have to pay for deductible or whatever it is. So you always win that grievance and get them the money back. Okay, but the reason I wanted to talk about this today.
Hey, dude, one time I had to go to the doctor for, I had this real bad itch, you know, downstairs. You think you get me my money back for that?
Well, if they put in deemed desirable, yes.
Ah, that's the catch. Yeah, all right. Okay. I'll still have to pay that clinic that money, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So anyway, I filed a grievance where it's got multiple carriers that was put on deemed desirable because management did it whenever they felt like it. And they're not supposed to do that because, as you know, in the ELM, the restricted sick leave, they have to follow the strict rules about the restricted sick leave per Employee Labor Manual Section 513.36, okay? So anyway, I had filed this grievance last year in 2023. And it finally got settled in December of 2023. And I was just notified that it got settled this month, which is weird, okay? Why they waited for a whole year to let me know that arbitration settlement got finally finished. So I want to talk to you about...
So this went all the way up to arbitration.
It went arbitration.
Okay, so what was the issue, like the issue statement? Well, go ahead. Present it in your way. I'm sorry.
Well, so, you know, this is where... I filed it, and this is the contentions that I used, okay? And the contention that I used was multiple carriers are placed on deemed desirable. There is no handbooks or manuals on the matter, on this matter. Only thing that requires bringing medical documentation is after 3 days or unrestricted sick leave, okay? I said see attachments, that's explaining about that, okay? And all information used to place carriers on deemed desirable list, okay? Requested information on 29th of November 2022 and 1st of December 2022. Manager manager so-and-so said she has no information. That means management maliciously flagged the carriers whenever they felt like, with no proof of sick leave abuse. Okay, and there has been.
I probably would have gone with capriciously. But you won your arbitration, so I'm not. I shouldn't tell you your business. Yes.
Okay. All right. There has been multiple settlements from local step B to arbitration, and the grievance numbers 528-19D, 838-11D, 1394-13D, 478-13D,
right, those are all our local
076-21C, and more. So this was explaining, I have a lot of grievance settlements on these.
Right. This is already a settled issue.
Yeah. So where management is not allowed to place or flag carriers on deemed desirable without restricted sick leave procedures, okay, per Memorandum 704 and Memorandum 2, management should inform employees prior to placing them on restricted sick leave that their usage of sick leave demonstrates a pattern of abusing the use of sick leave. So manager never notified carriers in advance and manager failed to prove pattern of abuse of the sick leave, okay? Now, I have the JKIM language that and the ELM of 513.361 and 362.
You want to go into any of that? My reading?
It's kind of long. My, okay.
You want me to read it? Because that's my thing.
Sure, you can read that part.
What do we got here? JKIM.
It's right there.
Oh, that's it? Oh, yeah. Dude, that's easy.
Yeah.
All right. Medical certification, ELM section 513.361 and 0.362 establish three rules. A. For absences of more than 3 days, an employee must submit medical documentation or other acceptable evidence in support of an application for sick leave. 3 days means three scheduled work days, and there's citations here. B. For absences of 3 days or less, a supervisor may accept an employee's application for sick leave without requiring verification of the employee's illness, unless the employee has been placed in restricted sick leave status, in which case verification is required for every absence related to illness, regardless of the number of days involved. However, C, for absences of 3 days or less, a supervisor may require an employee to submit documentation of the employee's illness, quote, when the supervisor deems documentation desirable for the protection of the interests of the Postal Service, end quote.
And that is where deems that management likes to use.
Right.
Okay. So, the ELM passage indicates that the abuses of 3 days or less, medical documentation should only be required if the employee is on restricted sick leave or if the supervisor is protecting the interests of the Postal Service. So, it is an arbitrary decision to require medical documentation for all employees not on restricted sick leave who called in the previous day. So, for absences of 3 days or less, unless an employee is on restricted sick leave, management must have a valid and legitimate explanation as to how the interest of the Postal Service is being protected by requiring medical documentation. Management provides no information in the current file indicating how requiring the carrier to provide medical documentation is protecting the interest of the Postal Service. A violation of Articles on 10 and 19 and ELM 513.361 of National Agreement has been shown. And I also provided an arbitration settlement, and then there's number 838-11D, okay?
Nice.
And that was sent to the arbitration, and it went on for, well, obviously it goes to formal A, then it goes to step B, and they tried to do a pre-arb, right? And that still went set up, and it went to arbitration.
What is management arguing on their half of it? Because it, informally, when they met with you, mm-hmm. they didn't seem to really argue anything.
Right.
They just said no.
No. Oh, no, no.
Okay.
The arbitration.
Oh, dude, okay. All right.
It's in the arbitration.
All right.
Okay. Which is cool because this arbitration, the arbitrator was named Mark Roberts, who settled on this. And the for the Postal Service, his name was Jeff Nelson. And our union was David James. Okay. And it was settled and awarded on December 2nd, 2023. Okay. So, award summary says that this is a class action grievance concerning the Employee and Labor Relations Manual, Section 513.36, and three employees not on restricted sick leave were flagged deemed desirable, requiring they provide documentation for absence of 3 days or less without notification by the employer in violation of the previous procedure, precedential Step B decisions at the Las Vegas installation. The instant grievance is sustained, and the grievance will be made whole in accordance with the discussions and findings below.
Nice.
Okay. So let's read what it says about all the stuff on here, okay? So the submission is that pursuant to the provisions of the 2019-23 National Agreement between United States Postal Service and National Association of Letter Carriers Union, AFL-CIO, this unreasonable matter has been presented for final resolution.
Nice. Okay.
The arbitrator was assigned according to the provisions of Article 15.4, and a live hearing transpired on November 3rd, 2023, at the USPS facility in Las Vegas, Nevada. So both parties herein presented evidence in the form of testimony, documentation, and verbal arguments. The arbitrator recorded the proceedings via digital recording and personal notes. Okay, so here's the background. This is a class action grievance on behalf of the three letter carriers working at Las Vegas facility, the Crossroads Delivery Unit. The issue involves the Enterprise Resource Management System, which thereafter called ERMS, okay? A leave management system utilized by the Postal Service. This automated system is a tool utilized by management to record, track, and manage employee leave. So via this dispute, the union alleges a violation of the Employee and Labor Relations Manual, Section 513.36, as well as a failure to comply with the previous arbitration decision and several precedential Step B decisions. This pertinent language of the ELM provides the 513.361. That's something that Alan already read about. So
You're welcome.
The same thing, so I don't need to read that again. And it says, more specifically, the union contends that three grievance were improperly flagged or designated as deemed desirable in the ERMS system. Such denotation in the ERMS system requires an employee to provide documentation to substantiate the reason for his or her absence from work as valid. Countering, the service insists that its right to require certain employees to provide documentation to validate absence of 3 days or less. This matter is not before me for final determination.
Nice.
Okay. So at the hearing, the parties will provide a fair and full opportunity to present evidence in various forms and examine and cross-examine witnesses. The record was closed on November 3rd, 2023, following oral closing arguments from the respective advocates. Okay. And then they put a joint exhibits, the agreement between national and so forth, and joint. They put the JKIM and grievance packages. Okay. And so here's our union's position. The union contends management flagged the grievance as deemed desirable in ERMS, requiring they provide documentation for absences of 3 days or less. According to the union, there are eight Step B decisions in the Las Vegas installation. That's a lot, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
As well as a national arbitration decision, which indicates this is a violation of the national agreement. Additionally, the union asserts management has been issued several cease and desist orders regarding the practice and the violation has occurred so frequently, the arbitrator's previous case issued a monetary award to the branch.
Nice.
Okay. The union states the carriers were not notified prior to being flagged as dictated by the prior Step B decisions. So further, union avers that the employer provided the employees no information indicating the reason they were being flagged. Okay. Now, the main thing is that the reason that management has to notify them is that if they're going to call in sick and they have to go get a doctor's note, well, they need to know that,
right?
So that they don't, you know, they don't get notified at 3 in the morning that you got to go to see a doctor.
Right.
Okay, because they were calling sick at like 3, 4, or 5 in the morning. They got to go see a doctor. You know, if as long as they were informed, they'll know to advance to properly maybe make appointments with a doctor or whatever they need to do. Okay, so this is a very, that's the reason why that there's so many decisions they have to notify the carrier.
That okay? totally makes sense. Like that way I know if I'm going to call in sick, okay, well, if I call in, I'm going to have to go to the doctor and I can plan accordingly.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. So the union claims that the employer did not provide if the opportunity to interview the supervisor responds for flagging the employees. I'm sorry, I went ahead by one paragraph, so I'm going to go back, okay? The union states the carriers were not notified. Okay, I did that. Then the union claims the employer did not provide it the opportunity to interview the supervisor response for flagging the employees. In that regard, the union reasons any argument presented by the service to be nothing more than conjecture. Okay.
So you tried to interview that supervisor and they made themselves not available? Or?
Saying that, no, we don't know who it is. Okay.
Wait, they tried to stonewall you and say, like, we don't know who deemed them desirable?
Exactly.
Oh, give me a break.
Okay. So in the union's opinion, the prior cease and desist orders and monetary remedies have not compelled the employer to end its repeated violations. So given this, the union requests a remedy fashion to force not pursue a remedy for issue 3. It does not concede its arguments regarding that matter.
All right. So this, again, is still all the union's position on this issue.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So here's management's position.
Maybe I should read this one so that we get the different
You can do that.
Okay, here we go. All right. Management. Wait, how long is this?
13 pages. We're halfway
there. Oh, no, dude. We're going to read all 13 pages? All right. Well, all right.
Yeah, I think it's good to read it.
All right, that's cool.
It's actually fun to read it because there's parts in there that's really funny.
All right, so feel free to interrupt me as needed. All right. The employer argues the union is attempting to obtain unjustified rules and unwarranted awards through deceptive means. And, dude, you're right. This is already really interesting. And that the union has muddied the waters so much with this case, it is critical to understand this point. The service maintains there is a difference between placing employees on restricted sick leave and considering them deemed desirable. And in this case, the employer argues the affected employees were so tagged to protect the interests of the Postal Service. With this grievances being for an alleged contractual violation, the service asserts that the union bears the burden of proof to show the party's agreement was violated. As a result, according to the service, the union must present evidence demonstrating a high probability its contentions are true. On the first issue, the service notes ELM Section 513.36, sick leave documentation requirements, specifies two scenarios in which an employee may be required to provide documentation for periods of absence of 3 days or less. One, when the employee is on restricted sick leave, or two, when the supervisor deems documentation desirable. With respect to the restricted sick leave scenario, the employer points out that the grievance in arbitrator Monat's decision cited by the union was on the restricted sick leave list, yet in the instant case, there is neither evidence the employees were on restricted sick leave list nor a claim by the union that they were. Regarding the deemed desirable reason, management avers this position allows it to flag employees in ERMs, and in its opinion, there is insufficient evidence to prove doing so is in violation of the national agreement or contrary to prior decisions regarding the ELM. As to the second issue, the service insists arbitrator Monat's decision is also not applicable to this aspect of the instant matter because the issue addressed by that decision was a discipline case in a removal action, whereas there is no evidence in this file of any of the grievance were disciplined for any of their absences. All right, so this is interesting because in many cases, the union takes the position that just let it go, and if they try to discipline you, then we'll fight it on the back end. So you made a proactive case here. Before the fact. And dude, that's one of the things that I love about you is that our union hall does that all the time. They're like, we'll worry about it if they try to issue grievance or discipline. And so here, we're taking that proactive case. But management is making the argument that if you're going to file this as a contractual grievance, then you have to prove that they did wrong. And, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, so moving on. The service is confident the evidence shows that the union has not met its burden of proof in the instant case, as management has the right and responsibility to flag employees in ERMs to require documentation as deemed necessary to protect the interests of the Postal Service. In its opinion, management did not violate the language of Arbitrator Monat's award. The service claims this is a case where restricted sick leave is being used to attempt to force management to do something that is not stipulated by the contract. The employer argues nothing in the national agreement dictates management must give written notice to an employee prior to designating him or her deemed desirable to protect the interests of the Postal Service. Asserting restricted sick leave is different in that it must be put in writing and the employee notified of such. It is the service's position these are two different situations, and the union is using one to acquire a right it does not have and to tie the hands of management on the other. Dude, it's an interesting argument because they both have the exact same use, the exact same purpose, but they're saying that they're completely separate. That one we have rules and the other one we don't. So we'll just use the other one.
But here's the thing. Is there any rule about using deemed desirable?
That's a question, right?
It's not there.
Dude, so for all the reasoning set forth above, the service asks the instant grievance be denied.
Okay.
All right.
And then I can do the issue.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So this is the issue statements, okay? Did management violate the national agreement, or JCAM, including but not limited to Articles 3, 5, 10, 15, and or 19, when they flagged in ERMS the employees who are not on the restricted sick leave? If so, what is the appropriate remedy? Number two, did management violate the national agreement, or JCAM, including but not limited to Articles 3, 5, 10, 16, and or 19, when it failed to abide by the cease and desist for flagging the in ERMS ordered by the arbitrator Jonathan S. Monat in arbitration? If so, what is the appropriate remedy?
Okay, dude. So I want to point out here that management is talking about this one arbitration decision, but they don't address anywhere in their thing all the times they've been told to cease and desist this very fucking practice.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Funny how they ignore all those.
Yeah.
Okay.
And number three, did management violate prior grievance settlements and or the national agreement of, or JCAM, including but not limited to Article 15, 17, and 31, they delayed and or failed to provide the union with interviews and or information? If so, what is the appropriate remedy? Okay. So there's a part in here about the discussions and findings, which I don't think we need to go over.
Cool.
Because it's just going over what the articles are and so forth, and what the, in his opinion, what the deemed desirable means and so forth. Is, you know, because here, the one part he actually says is that when the supervisor deems documentation desirable for the protection of the interest of the Postal Service, arbitrator says it's somewhat ambiguous because he fails to define the specific interest of the Postal Service.
Right. And so it's reasonable for you to ask, as a steward investigating it, what were these interests?
Mm-hmm.
And when you asked, they didn't give you an answer.
Right. So I don't think I need to go over that. There's multiple pages of that. But the most important part is that we need to go over is...
the decision?
Yeah. So let's see. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. This is the discussion findings. Okay. So it says, however, the service via Article 3 retains a broad range of discretionary authority of the supervision of its operations. Management retains the unilateral right to direct employees, maintaining efficiency and determine the methods and means in which their operations are to be conducted. Management's own limitations are defined within the other articles and sections of the wage agreement. Employer actions undefined within the four corners of the contract must be accomplished in a manner that is not arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. You know, one component of such a unilateral authority relative to this matter is that of a workforce scheduling. Understandably, employees sometimes seek discretionary times off. However, such an opinion may have an adverse impact on an employer's operation. In that light, the position of the respective parties in this matter are well taken. Employees desire to arrange their work schedule to accommodate their personal needs, while employers require reliable attendance by the employees to ensure the efficiency completion of work assignments. As noted above, the controlling language on which the dispute is based and is ambiguous. However, the local parties have a history of addressing issues involving the ELM 513.361. Okay, so I believe the arbitrator, what he's saying is, hey, the post office does have a right to do this, this, and this because of to try to protect the Postal Service and do their managerial work, which I do believe, okay? But there are rules, okay? So this is what he's saying. However, the local parties have a history of addressing issues. In fact, Joint Exhibit 2 includes several steppy decisions regarding interpretation and application of the section within Las Vegas installation. And in my considered opinion, the issues and settlement language found in these previous decisions are directly aligned with the facts and circumstances of the instant case.
Hey, that's the same thing I just brought up.
Right.
I'm a goddamn genius. Nice.
So further, because they were issued within the Las Vegas installation, the decisions are precedential within the installation.
Nice.
Okay? So troubling is that all of the prior steppy decisions mirroring the instant case contain similar cease and desist language. So, and in my view, per the arbitrator, right, that this phrase could not be more clear.
Nice.
Okay? Given this, receiving multiple cease and desist orders regarding the same subject matter is inexcusable.
Dude, good okay? job.
So one of the steppy decision dated in April 25th, 2019, summarizing a violation of past settlement, states the issue to be, did Las Vegas installation measurement violate article so-and-so? Okay, I think we kind of read that already. But the decision reads, the dispute resolution team, DRT, has resolved this issue, and a violation of Article 10 and 19 of the National Agreement has been shown. Management will cease and desist from further similar violations of Article 10 and 19 of the National Agreement, and local management will remedy NALC Branch 2502, $200, to serve as a tangible deterrent for ignoring prior settlements where it concerns this violation. Okay, and the award also reads, management violated the National Agreement when he flagged the grievance in ERMS contrary to prior settlements over flagging employees in ERMS and for disregard of prior settlements in arbitrary emphasis added over Article 15. Management is ordered to cease and desist the violation of these settlements, and Branch 2502 shall receive $200 to serve as a tangible deterrent for ignoring prior settlements. Okay? So the local parties specifically noted in this decision there was a disregard of the prior settlements, which is great because arbitrators say, look, they're showing you prior settlements, right. Okay?
Right, this issue has already been resolved. Mm-hmm. You've already agreed to stop doing this, and yet you're still doing it.
Yeah. So the employer advocate, which is the post office, attempts to negate this precedent with a several arguments. I do not find the arguments convincing, however.
Nice.
The management contends that the union has failed to meet its required burden of proof and insists this is a case of attempting to obtain unjustified rules and unwarranted awards through deceptive means. On the contrary, This is the arbitrator saying, wait a second, that's not right. The union's only burden is to show the three grievances in this case were flagged as deemed desirable without their knowledge and that they were not on restricted sick leave. The employer stipulates to that point by arguing a violation did not occur when the grievances were in fact flagged without being informed. And the union simply invokes several procedural step B decisions to support this position. These means do not fit management's deceptive depiction of them.
Nice. And
so the arbitrator is like, wait, I don't see anything being deceptive here. What are you talking about?
Right, because again, the previous decisions are clear on this issue.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. It gets better.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Management
also aversed that the union did not conduct a complete investigation by failing to interview all Crossroads delivery unit management personnel to determine which supervisor was responsible for flagging the grievance and inquire as to his or her reasons for doing so.
So wait a minute now. I'm not an arbitrator, and I wasn't there, but I'm going to suspect that you asked to interview the person who did this. What else are you supposed to do? You already did your part. Okay, go ahead.
This is what the arbitrator says. However, the union submitted a request for information to the employer, here's the exhibit, to approximately 20 minutes to interview the person who flagged the three carriers ERMS deems desirable, which was sufficient attempt to locate the responsible supervisor.
Nice.
It was the service's responsibility, which is the postal service, right, to fulfill the union's request by identifying the supervisor and making him or her available as asked.
Dude.
Wow.
Yeah, good job, man.
So he's saying that, they did ask. So what are you talking about?
Yep.
So the failure to identify the supervisor who flagged the grievance in ERMS and or ascertain his or her reasoning is a management issue. Management attempted to absolve itself of accountability for this deficiency, and customer service manager
redacted.
Yeah. in his testimony, it is not possible to program the software to indicate the reason for acquiring documentation. Even if it's true, this explanation does not relieve the employer of its responsibility to make reasonable effort to locate the supervisor in question. By contradicting this manager testimony, in September 9, 2002, a settlement reached between USPS labor relations specialist and NLC president provides the pertinent part that supervisor's notes of discussion pursuant to Article 16.2 and are not to be included in the supervisor's notes section of the RMD ERMS. Okay. While the instant case that does not involve Article 16.2, one can easily infer from the above passage that a direction to not enter notes in ERMS suggests it is possible to do so, thereby providing a means by which a supervisor, as well as the reason for flagging an employee deems desirable, may be identified. Regardless, upon receiving the union's request for information, the employee could have contacted all Crossroads delivery unit management personnel, as it suggested the union could have, to attempt to locate the supervisors in question. Given these options, to claim to be not able to identify a responsible supervisor or log reasons for flagging of an employee is arbitrary and unreasonable.
Nice.
The union cannot be held responsible for lack of records and management by the employer, a deficiency in the employer's sufficient software program, or management's unwillingness to inquire of its management personnel.
Dude, I feel like I'm your hype man over here, just like doing what? Raise the roof. Dude,
arbitrary awesome. Is saying, wait, you couldn't find out who did it? That's idiotic. Yeah. That's basically, I think that's what he means, okay? So he goes, it is unreasonable to label an employee not on restricted sick leave as deemed desirable without providing him or her any notice or order of reason. The employer simply ignored the prior precedent and instead arguing the union was attempt to obtain unjustified rules and unwarranted awards through deceptive means. Management submitted numerous arbitration decisions in an attempt to support its position in this matter, several of which address the flagging of an employee as deemed desirable. However, in each of these cases, the circumstances were different as none of them involved the precedence of a Step B decision. The grievance is sustained.
Nice. Okay?
Management shall remove the improper ERMS deemed desirable flagging. Remove it.
Okay. Removed completely from a system, like something it can't do anymore, or just remove it from those three carriers?
Management shall remove, it doesn't say, it just says remove the improper ERMS deemed desirable.
Okay.
That sounds like they can't use it. Yeah. Okay. And reimburse the grievance herein for any expenses incurred to obtain the requested documentation. So if the carrier had to go to a doctor's office and had to pay whatever,
they get
their money back.
Yeah.
And then management will cease and desist from any future violation of this 513.361 that may be similar in facts and circumstances of this instant case. Additionally, if an employee is flagged as deemed desirable at the last week installation, the same employee shall be immediately notified and duly informed of the reasons for doing so.
There you go. Okay? So it's the same rules as restricted sick leave.
Right.
Dude,
so,
that kicks ass.
So basically, this is an arbitration settlement, okay? And that means it's supposed to hold water more than any other grievance settlement because it's settled at the national level, okay? Even though it does mention that it's settled at the Las Vegas installation, that because it was settled here, that means that anybody can use it nationwide. But pulling up this arbitration, and the arbitration number is 4E19N-4EC2307-1319 for anybody who wants to get that information.
Look at that.
Or you can contact Alan to get more information on that, and he can send you that information. But I believe this is something that is need to be done because...
It's a problem nationwide.
It's a problem nationwide, and this program was created for management to mess with all the carriers, and it's not supposed to be that way because strictly restrict sick leave, there is many procedures they got to do.
Right.
And then restrict sick leave, the main part of it is they have to try to correct the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And management is not trying to correct the problem. They just want to punish. Because as you know, if we don't bring documentation, what happens?
Then you get discipline.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the whole thing about issuing discipline because they make it so that carriers are not notified. And if they're not notified, they can't get the documentation or it was already too late. And then they get disciplined for something that management failed to do it the proper way, which all discipline has to be corrective in nature.
There you go. Dude, Michael, great job, man. Dude, very well done. I can see why you won that arbitration case, why it went your way. You had all your ducks in a row. Dude, you kicked ass, man. Very well done.
Thank you.
And hopefully our listeners have learned something about the deems desirable list, why it's inappropriate to just arbitrarily put carriers on it. And dude, awesome job, man.
You got to also remember, deems desirable is nothing on it. It's not agreed with our union, okay? So it's not in our JCAB, it's not in our M41, M39, it's not anywhere, okay? There is no handbooks on it about how this program works. So therefore, management is using a program unilaterally, which they're not supposed to, and doing it on purpose. So that's why we have to file these grievances anytime they use it, because they're using a program that has not agreed with the union.
And there's a reason that all those Step B decisions also went the union's way. Mm-hmm. And it's for these reasons that you're saying. Yep. All right. Excellent work, Michael. And guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Michael, for coming in and being a guest. And dude, it was definitely informative for me. Hopefully it was for you too. And I will catch you guys next time.